Welcome to the audio edition of the Christian Science Monitor Daily. It's Wednesday, January 17th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amelia Newcomb.
And I'm Ken Kaplan.
What's the image of Africa in many developed countries? Last Friday, editors here got a quick reminder of the portraits that dominate. Our photo of the day feature targets a topic in the global conversation. In this case, we were looking for photos from African countries of the modern development that is there for the seeing. Think of skyscrapers, for example. Our choice was in response to the headlines over President Trump's reportedly derogatory comments about the conditions in many U.S. immigrants' home countries. We looked and looked. We broke from the rule that the photo have been taken that day. We had recent monitor photos of a new light rail system in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, but they had already run. We were dismayed at the lack of diverse offerings from photo services. In talking about the issue with our Africa Bureau Chief, Ryan Lenora Brown, she noted the high global awareness of conflict or poverty in a number of African countries, but the far lower profile of progress. For middle-class Africans, she said, the comments struck a nerve because they rendered invisible a version of African life that is on the rise almost everywhere on the continent, of skyscrapers and five-star hotels, populated by doctors and lawyers and architects every bit as worldly as their counterparts. It was a lesson in making sure we're seeing the full picture. Now, here are our five stories showing the power of vision, equality, and environmental protection at work. Our first story. No one factor leaps out in an individual's decision to spy on his country. But a major U.S. case involving China that broke this week reminded of the need to focus on human factors as much as on a country's high-profile cyber capabilities.
What causes people to spy against their country? Oftentimes it's money. Sometimes it's an appeal to their ethnic heritage. Occasionally it's bitterness at perceived professional or personal slights. All these motivations may be at play in the case of a former CIA officer arrested Monday night on allegations of illegal retention of classified information. The FBI suspects that Jerry Chunxing Li passed secrets that helped Beijing brutally dismantle U.S. espionage operations in China. If true, this shows that China has developed human espionage capability on the level of its well-known cyber hacking skills. U.S. officials have long worried about the growing Chinese intelligence threat. This big case may show that threat has fully arrived. But spy and counter-spy has long been an element of big power competition. Says one expert, I don't think this should be seen as something that should undermine the U.S.-China strategic relationship. The story was reported by Peter Greer for the Monitor.
In Afghanistan, the International Committee of the Red Cross is facing a sharp challenge to what it has seen as the foundation of its security, the visibility of its helping hand. But while it is dialing back for now, it is maintaining its commitment to making sure that those who need help get it.
For the International Committee of the Red Cross, which has spent decades helping Afghanistan cope with the human cost of war, security for its workers lies in its visibility to the Afghan public. The more varied and broadly distributed its services, the more assured are ICRC workers that the public welcomes them. Our security is not guaranteed by high blast walls or by armed people, says Monica Zenarelli, the ICRC head of delegation in Kabul. Our security concept is all around what we deliver in terms of services, the relevance of it, and the acceptance we get in return. Today, however, insecurity has prompted the organization's most significant downsizing here in a generation. In 2017, 7 staffers died in 3 incidents. Perhaps most painful and inexplicable, a physiotherapist was gunned down by one of her own patients, leading the organization to announce in October it would drastically reduce its work, especially in northern Afghanistan. For now, no new security paradigm has presented itself other than to hunker down and hope the situation improves with time. We still have to be accessible to people, says Ms. Zanarelli. Otherwise, we are not relevant anymore. This story was reported by Scott Peterson in Kabul, Afghanistan, for The Monitor.
Can a critical mass of women's voices change how we prioritize action? A number of countries have decided it can produce a notable shift in thought. This is the second of our stories on Reaching for Equity, a global series on gender and power.
Picture a country that prizes gender equality, including in public office. You probably pictured someplace in Scandinavia. But places like Sweden, Finland, and Norway didn't create opportunities for women overnight. Often, they were decades in the making. What happens when you need to change things quickly? One fast-track attempt is gender quotas. They're particularly common in Latin America and Africa, now home to 12 of the top 20 countries in the world for women's legislative representation. Today, 24 African, Latin American, and Caribbean countries have crossed the so-called critical mass threshold of 30% female representation. At that point, experts say, there are enough women to band together to create substantive policy changes. Sometimes they bring new urgency to matters that weren't typically thought of as women's issues, like renewable energy. It changes the agenda, says the director of one NGO in Zimbabwe. It creates a critical alliance on issues where, in the past, women have had to be the sole campaigners in a house full of men. This story was reported by Whitney Ulick in Mexico City and Ryan Lenora Brown in Zimbabwe for The Monitor.
Libya's post-Gaddafi collapse has been a tragic case study on the consequences of instability, the haven it provides militants, the surge of desperate migrants it drives toward Europe, the cautionary tale it offers North Korea's Kim Jong-un. That's why the world is watching as one group in particular strengthens its grip.
Why did Muammar Gaddafi, the late dictator, open up Libya to the Mudkalis in the early 2000s? Probably because the apolitical, fundamentalist Muslim movement from Saudi Arabia had a reputation for unquestioning support of dictatorships and antagonism toward democracy. Sure enough, the Mudkalis were the last group to abandon Mr. Gaddafi despite his regime's violence against its own citizens. Fast forward to today, and the ultra-conservative Salafist movement is still in Libya, taking advantage of the post-revolution chaos to impose their hardline interpretation of Islam. As the Mudkalis align themselves with strongmen around the country, longtime experts and observers warn that the group may devastate civil society and impose an undeclared theocracy. For our briefing on the Mudkalis, their ideology, and how they likely will use their growing influence in Libya, click on the Read button or go to csmonitor.com/daily. This story was reported by Taylor Luck in Amman, Jordan, for The Monitor.
The interests of animals and humans have often been at odds when it comes to preservation efforts. But in Cambodia, one effort is finding a way to bolster the prosperity of both.
Osam Commune is nestled in Cambodia's remote Cardamom Mountains in a dense, biodiverse swath of forest. About 200 families in the Chong ethnic group live in the area, as do 50 of the country's 200 remaining Siamese crocodiles. Cambodia's animals have been hard hit by rapid deforestation, among the fastest in the world. But so have communities like the Chong, whose livelihood and culture have long drawn on the forests, including spirit forests, where many make offerings as a sign of respect for the environment in which they live. Working with environmental organizations, however, some hope they can build a more secure future for the forest and themselves. Initiatives to protect the habitat are providing ecotourism jobs and other sustainable livelihoods, helping to reduce the economic incentives for logging. One resident is on the front line, monitoring crocodiles' habitats to detect illegal hunting, a job he took over from his father. I am proud to be Chang and living here in this historic area, preserving the crocodiles for the next generation, he says. This story was reported by Peter A. Ford in Cambodia for the Monitor.
Now, commentary on coarse language from the Monitor's editorial board. Words matter. Coarse or profane language usually represents an outburst of emotion, not careful reason. It's a mode of thought not conducive to calm and effective problem solving. The offensive term used by the U.S. president, there remains disagreement on the exact word or phrase used, expressed a derogatory and dismissive view of the people of African countries. The best lesson here may come in the form of self-examination. It's a good time for everyone to ask themselves if they are nurturing unfair or inaccurate images of people from any racial, ethnic, or religious group. In an informal survey of last Sunday's sermons at churches around the United States, The Washington Post found religious leaders reminding their congregations of this opportunity to examine their thinking. There were some controversial words spoken this week about the value of people, said one Indiana pastor, according to a parishioner. Talk of others who are not deserving. Let me be clear, the pastor said. These words are not of Christ. That's a wrap for the news today. For the full-length version of these stories, click on the blue Read buttons at csmonitor.com/daily. And thanks for joining us. Tomorrow, as the future of DACA swirls in Washington, we will take a fresh look at the issue of unauthorized immigration, where bipartisan agreement has often appeared to be within reach, only to slip away at the last minute. Also, watch for a coming change to our daily audio programming. Since our launch, we've included a shortened version of the Christian Science Perspective article. Starting January 22nd, we will now include a full audio version of the article, and it will be read by the actual author whenever possible. Again, this will begin next Monday, January 22nd. Now, to close our program, here's a Christian Science Spiritual Perspective on Home is Power.
So many people move from one house to another. Others sleep on the open desert, on a mattress in a homeless shelter, or on a cot in army barracks. Some people struggle to keep their homes because of financial challenges. Regardless, everyone can gain a spiritual sense of home that goes with them everywhere, and with it comes tangible strength and peace of mind. Mary Baker Eddy once said, "Home is not a place, but a power." We find home when we arrive at the full understanding of God. Home can be felt by acknowledging the presence of God and affirming His goodness, tenderness, and perpetual care for each of His children, each of us. The ideas that constitute this highest sense of home are indestructible and always present. And since home is a power, it is something that can be discerned and demonstrated in practical ways for every one of us, through inspiration that brings solutions to our needs. For the full version of this article, click on the blue Read button at csmonitor.com/daily.
We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfas, Dave Scott, Tim Malone, and Jeff Turton. Also, thanks to Ben Frederick for reading today's Christian Science Perspective by Robert R. McCusick.
This report was produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2018.